Welcome to the 155 Election Podcast, interviews with candidates running for mayor, city council, and school board trustee in Hamilton, Ontario. Episode 109. Robert Parrish, you are running for city councilor in Ward 4. Welcome to the 155 Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Joey.
Firstly, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Primarily, I am a father to two beautiful young girls, 4 and 2. Partner to Jennifer, who is an RN working in family health in the ward. And I've been a programmer for 20 plus years. I'm self-taught since I was about 13 years old. And mainly working on large-scale business software. My primary role is as a problem solver, and that's what I hope to bring to council.
Why are you running?
I'm running because I've lived in Ward 4 pretty much my whole life. When I was born, my parents lived on Osborne, which is a few blocks west of the Red Hill. I grew up on Cameron, which is the central part of the ward, and I've lived for the last 20 years on Graham, which is the western boundary of the ward. So I know the entire ward fairly well. It's where I've lived pretty much my whole life. And with Sam retiring, I've always wanted to run, but I looked at who else is running, and there was no one that I was really energized to get behind, and I thought this is my opportunity to take this on. I just see a lot of issues coming up in the ward with the LRT, with density, and the fact that me and my partner have decided to make this our home and raise our girls here, going to school here, is a big reason why.
Do you live in Ward 4, yes or no?
Yes.
Does it matter if one lives in the community one seeks to represent?
I think in municipal, I think it definitely matters. I know, obviously, I'm biased by saying that, but for two reasons. One is, I always go out for walks. I talk to my neighbors. I feel like I'm in tune with what's going on. The other reason is that even in talking to all the people that I've talked to, basically, when I mentioned that there actually are people running that don't live in the ward, their first reaction is they're surprised that's even allowed. So I think it just for honesty's sake, unless you're coming right out and saying, look, I don't live in this ward, but people seem to expect that somebody's going to live in the ward that's going to represent the ward.
How have you contributed to your community and our city?
A few years ago, when it was our daughter's first birthday, we decided to, I want to start a tradition where we would help out families at Christmas time. And the first year we did it, I just went on Facebook to a community page looking for a family to help. My mother did a similar thing when I was a kid, and to look to provide like full Christmas dinner and presents for the family and all that sort of thing. And the reaction was overwhelming. I talked to some friends that were about what we were doing. They were interested in helping too. And the first year, I think we did 3 or 5 families. And then the second year, we did 25 families. And I think this past year, we did just over 30 families. And just that experience of delivering the meals myself to all the houses was just, it's really eye-opening. And this is another thing that made me want to run for council. Because there's a lot of really good people there that either are just in a hole they can't get out of or need a little extra help. And a lot of the deliveries I made were in our ward.
What are 2 of your priorities for Ward 4 and 2 of your priorities for Hamilton as a whole?
For Ward 4, one would be increasing green spaces and walkable streets. I think what's happened with Ottawa Street over the last decade or so is phenomenal. And I believe that the same could be done for Kenilworth and Parkdale. And also having connectors to each of those. The second thing for Ward 4 will be LRT. That'll be a priority, obviously, with construction starting, staying on top of any challenges that the businesses along the route or people currently using transit along the route will have. For the city, one thing is reducing the harm of poverty. That's a really big deal to me. Examples of that would be following up on efforts to address rent evictions. And the other thing is obviously people sleeping in tents. That has to end. The second thing for the city that I'd like to see is help with childcare and daycare and summer camps for children. There is a deficit of available childcare spaces in the city right now, and I think that's something that's helpful to both parents and children.
What are 3 skills you will bring to elected office that makes you the best choice to represent Ward 4 on Hamilton City Council?
As a programmer, I think I bring 2 really good skills. One is problem solving, and the other is data gathering and analysis. These are skills that aren't on city council right now, and I think would be a great asset to city council. The third is motivating others. I just have a history of when I get excited about something, I have ability to get other people excited about it as well. That's what I want to bring to council.
The following preamble leads to questions regarding honesty and transparency. Let's presume you are elected. During your first few weeks, you will be briefed regarding what City Hall refers to as confidential matters. We do not know what confidential matters are presently being withheld from the citizens of Hamilton. All four councillors first elected in 2018 initially voted to support the Coots Paradise cover-up, before three of the new councillors began voting against the continuing cover-up. The Municipal Act prohibits members of council from releasing information the majority of council declares confidential. With this in mind, what principles and advice will help you determine what information should be confidential and what information should be made public?
With this one, I think it really has to be handled on a case-by-case basis, but as far as just general principles, anything that has to do with public safety cannot be kept confidential, obviously. It doesn't mean that you have to reveal all information that, say, legal counsel is telling you to reveal, but I would hope that if you have good legal counsel, they're not going to have you withhold information that could cause liability issues. So even if you don't have, from an empathy perspective, to give out public safety information, hopefully at least that would be a reason to, when you need a majority of council to vote on such a thing.
The Red Hill Inquiry will issue its report early in the next term of council. The revelations regarding how City Hall ignored problems on the expressway and the toxic culture at City Hall, which silenced good people, are shocking. How do you plan to review and consider the final inquiry report when the commission releases its findings and recommendations?
I'm not sure what council can do with the findings. Nothing else than I think we have to look at transparency and tracking reports and how that happens currently. If I'm correct, there was a report in 2013 that was buried or hidden or forgotten about. I'm not quite sure. And the fact that that was able to happen has to be remedied. Any report like that should just, before it comes out, there should be a plan of it's going to be posted on this page or it's going to go to this council and or this committee and then go to this page. Looking into whatever mistakes or process errors happened that led to that, I think that's the best that we can do as council to going forward to make sure that it doesn't happen again.
The construction of the B-Line LRT will begin during this term of council. It will be the largest construction project in Hamilton's recent history. How do you plan to respond to construction challenges and opportunities?
For opportunities, we need to encourage more density along the route with a focus on affordable rentals, preferably geared to income. People that can take advantage of affordable units are probably more likely to rely on transit to get around. So that'll be one of the opportunities. The challenge, obviously, for construction phase is going to be the small businesses along the route, along the main street, that will be affected by the construction. I would like to walk that route every day and talk to the business owners and just stay up to date with them. It's blocks from my house anyway. For residents that will rely on transit, just stay on top of how it's affecting their lives day to day now and be constantly involved in addressing their issues.
Before we turn to land use planning, let's have a lighter question. What is something interesting or unique within Ward 4 that you believe the rest of Hamilton should know about?
This is an easy one. Yulee Stairs. It's four sets of stairs that connect the Bruce Trail to the rail trail and then the rail trail to the Mountain Brow. I've been hiking that for over 12 years, taking dozens of pictures, and I've actually had the opportunity to see Mr. Yulee there working on the stairs several times, which was pretty fun. I got to talk to him. Sam Morrell actually posted a picture of Yulee Stairs on Facebook about 5 years ago, and our mayor commented asking, "Where's this, Sam?" That tells me that not everybody knows about them.
City Council decides land use planning and zoning. It decides where housing and businesses are located and the type of housing and businesses which are permitted in locations. There are three questions on this topic. The City of Hamilton is updating its outdated residential zoning bylaws. There are parts of Ward 4 which remain under the 1952 former City of Hamilton residential zoning bylaw. What is your vision for residential zoning in Ward 4?
I think this question comes down to increased density, and I'm okay with increased density when it's done on purpose. I think obviously along the LRT route, we can build more density there. That's part of the reason to have transit is to have more people have easy access to it. In the residential or single-family home areas, I'm not a big fan of allowing investors to come in and buy up single-family homes and change them into rentals.
There are active planning applications within Ward 4 with differing views regarding if they represent appropriate intensification or not. Secondary dwelling units and the proposed redevelopment of the Delta Secondary School property are two examples of this. How will you balance the need to approve new housing, including rental housing such as secondary dwelling units, while responding to concerns regarding development?
I think secondary dwelling units are fine as long as there's on-site parking. We had somebody on our street that converted their basement into an SDU, and they had to widen their ramp to their driveway to make sure there's ample parking for two cars, which I think that's fine. As far as turning houses into duplexes, that one I'm not a big fan of overall. The reason I say that is we had a house go up for sale on our street that was a small 1.5-story, 2-bedroom, 1-bathroom, typical starter home. And when it went up for sale, it went up for $400,000 or something like that. And there was literally a lineup down the street to get in to see it. This is during COVID. This is Thanksgiving of 2020. And the gentleman that ended up buying it paid about $200,000 over asking, spent a year renting it, and turned it into two rental units, $2,400 for the main floor, $1,600 for the basement. And in my mind, what happened there was he outbid a bunch of first-time home buyers and put them back into the rental market. So he's charging $2,400 for the main floor, $1,600 for the basement, I believe. And basically, in my mind, he's taken a starter home off the market and put people back into the rental market. And I don't think, as far as the housing solution, that's a solution. I think there's other things that we can do. In the news now, there's the development at Brock University site, just down the street from where I live. I walked by it a few times. That makes sense as far as intensification. I do have some issues with it. I went and talked to the neighbors that live on Rosedale, and that issue needs to be addressed, and there's going to be traffic issues. There's a church right across the street. They have funeral services all the time, and they literally take up an entire lane of traffic on King Street whenever there's a funeral service going on. There's going to be parking for 1,500 cars there. If you put 1,500 cars right across the street, there's going to be issues there. There's little things that need to be ironed out, but those little things are important, I think.
There are four LRT stops planned within Ward 4. The provincial policy statement, Ontario's de facto planning law, defines the 500 meters surrounding LRT stations as major transit station areas. In short, this is where density will be built. What is your vision for major transit station areas, and how will you implement that vision?
My vision would be to encourage new builds for rentals. I can think of three properties along the line where I think would be perfect for new rental buildings. And also to think about the major cross streets that will go along the line, like Ottawa, Kenilworth, and Parkdale, that would be within walking distance of the LRT line, building up density there as well.
Road safety is a significant issue across Hamilton, including in Ward 4. What is your overall plan to address road safety? Please provide three detailed specifics of your plan.
Well, number one would be, I know that there's the Safe Streets Initiative that is looking to find problem areas in throughout the entire city, going ward by ward, but I would just plan to continue, like I do now, walk the ward myself and find problem areas, encourage residents to do the same thing and report back to me and stay on top of that back to council. The other thing would be continuing the work that Sam's doing on Kenilworth with bump outs and traffic easing, and continue that to Parkdale and possibly Melvin, turning them to the complete streets model. My third thing would be, I would like to make sure that you can get on a bike and go from any point A to any point B within the ward or outside the ward and be safe.
Turning to governance and expertise, let's use the idea that it takes 10,000 hours to master a skill or trade and apply it to being a municipal councillor. There isn't even 10,000 hours between the election and being sworn in. One person cannot be an expert in all matters which come before council for decision. How will you gain the necessary learning to be able to make informed decisions? What reading will you do? What professional development will you look for? And what types of people will you seek advice from?
This is a great question. I believe in lifelong learning. As a programmer, I'm always taking courses, doing my own research, learning new languages, new technologies, and I take courses on a site called Udemy, and I've already looked there. There's urban planning courses, transit courses, and I would like to take those. I don't expect to be a expert in these because I know we have experts on staff, but I would like to know enough to be able to ask intelligent questions and understand intelligent responses. Spend time with staff like Jason Thorne, and with planning, learn all I can from him. And I think another valuable resource is talking to student groups at Mac and Mohawk. I've seen reports that they've produced, and I think that that kind of stuff is valuable, and getting their feedback from fresh eyes is always good.
What are two changes you will propose to improve city services?
One is the response to road issues. Found that a lot this last winter. There's a lot of issues with potholes. It seems to be more reactive than proactive, especially with climate change. We have a lot of days where the water melts into the road, then it freezes the next day, melts the next day, and then you get potholes. And in that weather, all they can do to address them is throw asphalt in, and the asphalt gets kicked out in no time. These issues have to be addressed like before winter comes. That's one thing. The other thing is park and trail cleanup. I'm a big walker, hiker, take my kids to parks all the time. I think the city does a pretty good job at it, but I always see citizens out picking up garbage, which is fantastic, but that's not something that we should be relied on.
What are two changes you will propose to improve quality of life in Hamilton?
One is addressing the tent encampments. And I read an article about how they handle it in Kitchener, Waterloo. And it was a very good article where activists had set up a tent encampment on purpose and had city services involved to help the residents in the camp. This is very different than another tent encampment in Kitchener, Waterloo as well, that just came about organically, and they had a lot of crime, a lot of problems there. I think a good strategy might be to do tent encampments on purpose, to set them up on purpose and have city services there, and that be part of the transition from homelessness to transitional housing to affordable housing. Another thing is follow up on addressing rent evictions. I know that the Ward 3 councillor had introduced a motion to look at a bylaw that exists in BC. I think New Westminster, BC, if I remember correctly.
It's 2026. The public record is writing a review of the 4-year council term that is just ending. What 3 words do you hope we will use to describe your term on council? And what 3 words do you hope will describe council as a whole?
For me, I hope it's caring. People understand that I care about the ward and the people in the ward. Creative, that I can come up with creative solutions, and accessible, that Sam was the best at being accessible. I know that personally, and I hope to use him as a model for that. For council, collaborative, that we can all work together well. Hopefully we have a lot of different pieces that work together well and not 15 copies of the same thing. Compassionate, citizens better see council as compassionate, and visionary, that we can come up with new ideas.
Thank you. That's the end of the prepared questions you were sent in advance. Do you have any closing remarks you wish to share?
Yeah, just some fun facts about me in the East End. I went to Bishop Ryan High School, the original one on Queenston. My dad went there for grade 9 the year it opened, and I graduated there the year it closed. My mom died 19 years ago. She was held up at gunpoint at the Dairy Queen at Ottawa and Main, and she worked for Ron Joyce there. And when Ron Joyce moved over and opened up Tim Hortons, she was one of the first employees at Tim Hortons over there.
Thank you. How do people find out more about your platform and get in touch with you?
Right now, I've actually just bought a new domain this morning that will be launching the website soon, which will be weareward4.ca. And you can find me on Facebook. You just go to my personal account, Robbie Paris, or there's a new We Are Ward 4 Facebook page.
Thank you for joining us. This has been episode 109 of the Public Records, the 155 podcast. Thank you to the Hamilton Public Library for the use of their makerspaces to record these podcasts. Thank you to the readers and listeners of the Public Record for your support. You can visit thepublicrecord.ca to get more City Hall coverage, sign up for my City Hall newsletter, and become a member of the press club to keep me covering Hamilton City Hall. Thank you.